Talk Central Wednesday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Mobile Kintech studio as we get ready for the Canucks season and home opener. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And yes, I said the Mobile Kintech studio because we are doing the show from the place to get your pregame and postgame going this season for every Vancouver Canucks game, and that is Park Casino. So we're here from 4 to 7 doing the show before puck drop, and we'll be here raffling off a Canucks jersey. If you want to stop by and say hello while you get a pregame bevy or whatever it is you're going to do before you get into Rogers Arena, you can stop by and say hello.
Yeah, you come by, say what's up, and you have a chance to win a few really cool items. Plus, hanging out at parks, always a lot of fun. Like, I always have a good time hanging out here, and whether it's you want to enjoy a beverage or perhaps, you know, try your luck a little bit, whatever it is.
Whatever it might be, there's a good place to stop by before the game at Rogers Arena. Of course, must be 19 plus to play, and please play responsibly. So, we're here. And last night, the NHL season gets back into gear. You had the triple header, Ray Ferraro doing color on two of the three games because the man is just an animal, apparently. And
it was really kind of cool seeing him like run to the plane, essentially, and fly a private jet to Utah. And it's being documented from like the car to the airplane.
We don't get private jets around here, you know, like We're whipping up the Coca-Cola when we got to go to Penticton for training camp and get back in time for the next show.
Like he's almost like at Taylor Swift level now, right? Like taking private jets from one event to another within the same day.
It's pretty impressive. But nonetheless, season's off to a good start, and hopefully the Canucks can do that as well tonight. Let's get to the open.
Welcome to the open.
That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me.
Yeah, it's the open where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. Canucks welcoming in the Calgary Flames to Rogers Arena to kick off their season. And look, I know a lot of people are mad at us for some of the predictions we made on yesterday's show. I'm not sure why. It's not like we picked the Canucks to miss the playoffs or anything. But one thing I will say, and you tell me if this is a hot take or not, Sat. I'm not expecting the Canucks to win by 7 goals in their season and home opener again tonight.
Does that make you negative?
It might. It very well might. I'm not sure.
Pessimist.
8-1 last year was about as good as it can get. Tonight we'll see what happens. But you know, we've talked about the Canucks so much. We've gotten ready for the season every which way possible. But the more I look at this roster, and I saw you tweet today about just how impressive the depth of the roster is. Mm-hmm. I mean, this roster ranks probably about as good as any since the 2011 team.
Oh, I mean, it's really funny when you go through the rosters since 2012. And there were some years where the blue line looked pretty good because you had Alex Edler, you had Dan Hamhuis, you had Kevin Bieksa, you had Chris Tanev, even Jason Garrison, right?
For a time.
Yeah, for a short time before they traded him for a second round. They got a second out of it, so I mean, it worked out, right? Nonetheless, there were some years the blue lines looked okay or pretty good overall, like a top four, but the issue was lack of health, always injuries. And Bieksa, obviously, God love him, wasn't the same impact player towards the latter stages as opposed to what he was during the late 2000s, early 2010s, where he was playing at an excellent level. And that's going to be part of the difference between what we see now with what we saw even through the more, I guess, quote-unquote, stronger rosters they had, I guess, from 2012 to 15 before it fell apart. But there were a lot of aging players on those teams. This team has youth. They have some high-end talent. And the depth they have, seemingly, at the AHL level, is also something we haven't seen here. For many years, there was a lack of players pushing upwards and making tough decisions. And you saw guys like Jack Skilly making teams, signing players like Mike Santarelli to play big roles. And you're not seeing that to the same degree now. You're looking at, you see a guy like Daniel Sprong come here on a flyer, but there's a lot of competition for him. You know, if he doesn't play to a level for half the season, how long do you think it takes before it's Baines or it's Ratu or it's Lekkerimäki? And we haven't seen this in this organization for a long time.
No, and I mean, even just looking at thinking about the team that they took over a couple of years ago and where it is now, I mean, sure, like there is still a lot of the core players in place, essentially all of the core still in place outside of Bo Horvat, but they've replaced Horvat with Philip Peronik. And, you know, it's similar to what Jim Rutherford mentioned when he first took the job as president of hockey ops with the Vancouver Canucks and essentially said, we've got good players here, but we've got to surround them with better pieces and we've got to build a more consistent play style that can allow us to win more hockey games and get them to buy in to playing that play style that constitutes winning hockey. And, you know, that's just something that eluded this team. It's not that Travis Green wasn't trying to get them to do that for a time. You know, under Travis Green, the team did play fairly well defensively, yeah. But it was always inconsistent, and the support pieces on the roster, the role players on the roster, never held up their end of the bargain. For the first time in a long time, last year we saw that come together, and they're building on that going into this year.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the other part of it in terms of how good is this team going to be, is honestly the steps your higher-end players take. I mean, a lot of it comes down to Pettersson this season, right? But, like, bringing it back to what you were mentioning at the start of the show in terms of the reaction people had to the predictions, but I'm at a point with this team, and this is a testament to the strength of the team, that I don't look at it and say they kind of need to win a division to prove themselves. They need to finish first in the conference. They need to do these things in the regular season for us to feel confident in them. I don't need to see those things. I'm very comfortable, as long as this team's a 100-point team, that they have a chance in the postseason.
Yeah.
How good a chance they have is determined by, obviously, form, health, and which players can take a step, and what additions you might make or need to make between now and the trade deadline. But this is as good a chance this team has had. I mean, last year this team had a really good chance. When you really look at, you know, how everything broke, but we know the things that went against them ultimately, but they had a chance. This year might be the best chance they've had.
It's
since 2012, essentially, right?
Look, there's a reason why everybody looks at them as a 100-point team. You know, I did have a chuckle, like last night. I'm having my post-dinner spro, going through some of my Twitter mentions while watching the Utah Hockey Club get a layup over the Chicago Blackhawks. And it was funny because people were upset that I had the Canucks in third of the Pacific. And look, the graphics are good. Part of it is I wouldn't call it engagement farming, but we know that people are going to react when they see predictions on the page, and that is exactly what happened. But third place in the Pacific, there's a real possibility. All three teams that come out of the Pacific in those top three spots, Edmonton, Vegas, Vancouver, all finish over 100 points.
Yeah.
And are all considered cup contenders once the playoffs begin. Much like what happened in the Central last year with Dallas, Colorado, and Winnipeg. All well over 100 points, and all teams that had Stanley Cup aspirations when the playoffs began.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a lot of competition and a big fight for finishing first in the division, because nobody wants to play the other team, one of the other two teams in the first round.
I'd rather get a wild card team than have to go toe-to-toe with Vegas, Edmonton, or Vancouver in the first round.
The teams we're looking at in the wild card are, you know, whether it's Utah, for instance, right, or Seattle, teams that obviously may not be easy to beat because it's never easy winning in the postseason, but you'd rather face them than face Vegas in the first round or Vancouver in the first round if you're Edmonton, for instance, right? Or Vancouver, same thing for those other teams. And I think that's going to, honestly, like, I wouldn't be surprised if the point separation between first and third in the division is less than a handful of points.
Yeah. I totally agree. And, you know, one of the things about, okay, so they finished third. So what? Like, they showed us that they can make the playoffs. They showed us that they can be a team that plays well in the playoffs, that has the defensive structure that it takes and the physicality that it takes to win in the postseason. Heck, they took Edmonton right to the brink within a goal in that Game 7, even though they started down 3-0 in that series, in that game. But just because I think or feel the Canucks aren't going to have 110 points or 109 points like they did last year doesn't mean I don't view them as a cup contender. I do very much believe that this team, as the season begins here tonight for them against the Calgary Flames, to me, in my eyes, they are a cup contender. I have Edmonton and Dallas in Tier 1 of the Western Conference. That Tier 2, Vegas, Vancouver, right there with those top two teams. That's how highly I think of this roster. That's where I see a lot that can go right for this team. I feel like, as you mentioned with the depth, they have worlds where even through some tough injury times, which is more likely to happen since they were relatively healthy last year, they'll be able to manage through those scenarios too. It's a quality hockey team. And my prediction for the start of the season today is going to be different come April, because teams are going to make deadline additions. Teams are going to have big-time injuries that they have to navigate through once the playoffs begin. Those are all realities that don't exist today that are going to exist come April.
Yeah, honestly, I have fun with these predictions. I really don't care what people say about them. Like, who cares? And like you said, by the time we get to the playoffs, we're going to have more information, and when you have more information, you may change your mind on certain things, and I'm hopeful this changed my mind. But I mean, there's nothing to apologize for. I mean, we have the Canucks making the playoffs, plus the Canucks, I have them going to the Western Conference Final.
Yes.
You know, and in terms of tiers, you mentioned Edmonton and Dallas. To me, Edmonton's alone in the top tier,
right?
And I don't even think there's a ton of separation. I only put them there because McDavid and Draisaitl and what they did last year and some of the high end, and we saw what that can be like in the playoffs, plus the supporting cast is overall pretty solid, although they have some holes. I don't have Edmonton winning the cup, though, because I'm not that confident in them. And I think the Canucks, like, they're either an emerging player away or adding a player away, perhaps, from being as good a team as any in the National Hockey League. And I think that's ultimately what is exciting about this season. And, you know, in terms of, you know, how people are viewing the Canucks, hey, maybe people would be happy if you said the Canucks win the Stanley Cup, but, you know, one day you're accused of being a homer, the other one you're accused of being a Canucks hater. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. But, honestly, not too worried about it.
Last year I had the Canucks finishing third in the division. Everybody called me an ultimate homer and that I was off my rocker. Canucks are barely going to make the playoffs. I had L.A. missing last year. It took them until the final couple days of the season to actually punch their ticket to the dance, and they end up finishing third in the division because the Pacific ended up being weaker than we thought it was going to be.
Well, yeah, and I see people texting in about Vegas. Like, Vegas has some holes. You look on the wings, they don't have a ton. And they're going to have to make some additions. But their blue line is as deep and good as any blue line in the National Hockey League. And their goaltending is more than fine. They've proven that. So I'm not too worried about Aiden Hill either, right? So, and then the spine of their team, even though Carlson is injured, you have Jack Eichel. Mm-hmm. You have William Carlson. You have Tomas Hertl. You have Nicholas Roy.
Yeah.
Like, these are really strong centers. So the spine of their team is very strong. So that's why they're not going to be a pushover. And if they play strong two-way hockey, they kind of be like Bruins West in the way they play. And that, you know, makes them a tougher regular season team. Again, regular season and playoffs, two completely different things.
Yeah.
I like the Canucks' chances in the playoffs against Vegas.
Yeah.
Heck, I picked the Canucks to come out of the division, right? I like the Canucks' chances against Vegas in the playoffs. In the regular season, Vegas may end up having one or two more points. And I don't think that matters in the grand scheme of things.
I think a couple of texts coming in. Vegas's roster, not very impressive. Another one says Canucks third. Are you high? I get it. You know, I think one thing with Vegas that even maybe I underestimated until really diving into my predictions and thoughts on it this week is how good Tomas Hertl can be. And we haven't seen it in a while, but, you know, that's a player probably going to be a lot better this year for Vegas than he was last year, getting traded while injured and then having to ramp it up at the start of the postseason. We'll keep this going. Kevin Woodley is going to join us as he does every single Wednesday. But let's get to the Canucks Central Roundup. JT Miller playing in his 800th career game tonight. Honestly, it seems like yesterday we were at the Vancouver draft when they made that trade. And here we are 5 years on, and JT Miller's done nothing but, just be the 11th best scorer in the league since becoming a Vancouver Canuck. And now he's set to play his 800th game here tonight, Sat.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about already one of the most prolific Canucks in history, 800 games now under his belt, and the level of player that he's become as a Canuck is what's most impressive. I was listening to the 32 Thoughts podcast, and they were talking about William Nylander and perhaps trying to transition him from wing to center, and they're wondering who has done that at that age. And it's like JT Miller.
The same thought.
Like JT Miller, guys, right?
Like yelling into the abyss while I'm on the treadmill or on the seawall.
And not that JT hadn't played center at times previously, whether it was a spell here and there with Tampa or more so with the Rangers, he was mostly a winger nonetheless. And same thing with Nylander. He's had times where he's played center, but he mostly has been a winger. JT is also a player who's made the transition that's very difficult to do, and he's done it at an extremely high level. He's a unique player. He's almost a unicorn type of player, and it's good that people are finally appreciating what his strengths are. He has some weaknesses. He's obviously shown, that he had to grow and become a better, stronger two-way player, and he's done those things, and I think there's even more for him to grow, which he's acknowledged and said he wants to take that other step now in terms of being a strong defensive player. There aren't many players that can do what he does, and many players who have made that transition at that stage of his career as successfully as JT Miller has.
If he has a year, much like he's had every time since becoming a Vancouver Canuck, over 80 points, he will be into the top seven of Canucks players in history, as he'll jump over the names like Todd Bertuzzi and Pavel Bure, as JT has 402 points in his 364 games, playing in his 800th career game tonight. Mark Friedman cleared waivers today, sent down to Abbotsford, so Canucks going to bank some of that cap space that they get from sending Friedman down and playing tonight with 22 players on the roster.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm glad he cleared, and that's part of the reason I feel really good about the Canucks' depth. And you may kind of scoff at, Mark Friedman makes you feel a lot better about the Canucks' depth. It's having another legitimate right-handed defenseman who can play 10, 20 games for you if need be and hold his own and be an option. And having that is really valuable. Because if you have guys that get cratered, absolutely cratered, it sinks your team. We've seen this in the past. Like, guys, you guys have seen bad defensemen. You see what happens when substandard players play even small roles. Having a guy who can at least play actual minutes for you and survive those minutes, I think, is really valuable. Now you have another one of those. You have Brännström. So the blue line, and again, like, in terms of adding another top four down the road, for sure. But in terms of having depth now, lefties, righties, having veterans, having guys that can play on the power play, guys who can PK, they have good depth and variety for guys to play third pair roles in case of injuries.
When he got traded for last year, he played a big role right out of the gate next to Ian Cole. They had success in the minutes that they played together.
Yeah.
And then he became the extra defenseman. But, you know, to have Mark Friedman as your eighth defenseman on the depth chart, that's something a lot of teams would love to have, and the Canucks do have it, and also smart with the way they played the waiver wire to make sure that they're able to keep him on the roster before sending him down and be able to gain a little bit more cap space here. Atu Ratu sounds like he's going to be in tonight. Pew Suter is not at 100% and looks like he will be the extra for tonight's game. So Ratu, who has not played, since early on after he was acquired by the Vancouver Canucks, is going to get in tonight after a strong preseason, likely to play center between Hoglander and Garland, much like we saw through the course of the preseason.
Now, what about Suter not playing? Is that because they don't want to bring him in potentially because he was banged up, or do they feel like Ratu is just the better option at the moment? Because the coach he did kind of mention a few days ago about Suter. He's like, he had a decent camp, but he can still get better on his fitness. He can still, get better at certain things, and he's going to have to really fight for a spot, or he's going to really have to fight. So maybe not. Maybe he wasn't quite as impressed with what he had done prior to being injured.
I wonder if that plays a part. Is he the Dakota Joshua of last October?
It could be. I mean, going into a contract year, I think that's a great example. And we saw Joshua get some tough love early, and he really turned it around, and maybe that's the message here to Suter.
Ratu and Baines, could they both be on the road trip? Coach keeps mentioning Baines is going to get a call-up sooner or later, all about numbers with how they sent him down.
My nerdy salary cap brains, just wait until you need an injury. But one thing I think he was mentioning was he wants the guys around the first couple weeks. They're going on the road. Good for camaraderie. Maybe get those guys, in terms of the head coach, think of ingratiate them, show them what the NHL is like, practice with the guys, be around, and, build some chemistry on and off the ice with the guys, because you're going to need them later on and build their confidence up. But he mentioned you can't have guys run and not play. But he said maybe for a week or two you could do that. It seems like he wants to reward both guys by having them on the road trip. But Abbotsford starts their season on the road. They have a game on Friday and Sunday. Do you wait to call Baines up on Sunday or Monday, or have him join the team on the road? So we'll see how that goes.
We'll see how it ultimately plays out for the Vancouver Canucks. Joey DeCourt signed a $5 million deal over 5 years with the Seattle Kraken. I mean, I
Ron Francis,
I can't
heard
even
you?
Read it. It's like I'm so stunned by this contract. Ron Francis is just like, hey, everybody else is giving out goalie contracts. Why don't I do that too?
I loved it. I was thinking about you right away as soon as when I saw Joey DeCourcy gets a five-year, $5 million contract.
Like, Ron Francis, man, your blind spot is identifying goalies, and it's really had a bad effect on the start of the Seattle Kraken's expansion, given, Grubauer was not good yesterday, even though they dominated high danger scoring chances. And, hey, Joey DeCourt, he's been good for them, sure, but, like, 5x5, I mean, where did this come from? It just doesn't really compute for me. Like, how did this end up happening? Like, Demko got 5x5 when he signed his contract all those years ago. Interesting one. Speaking of new teams in the league, Dylan Gunther, scoring twice for the Utah Hockey Club yesterday. First goal in franchise history.
Why are you bringing Dylan Gunther up on a Canucks roundup?
It's just...
Can you just leave this OEL thing alone? I saw you tweeting about it again. Talk about engagement farming. This guy's the biggest engagement farmer on Canucks Twitter.
I didn't even name any players in the tweets or anything.
The worst trade in hockey history.
I just said it may be one of the worst trades in NHL history.
I saw that. I saw what you were doing.
Is it hyperbole to say that it's maybe the worst trade in NHL history? I know a lot of people were texting me and being like, Cam Neely is still, like, by far the worst trade in Canucks history. So how are you even bringing this up now?
Yeah, people brought up – I mean, if you were to talk about this last year, I think people would have been far more critical and in agreement with you.
Yeah.
Because Garland reemerged as a fan favorite, right? And I think
Garland was a part of the deal.
So at least, now it's like, well, at least you got Garland out of it, right? I think that's how a lot of people feel, at least about it.
All right.
But it is a horrible trade, no doubt. Let's not mince words here.
I mean, the context of it still gets me every time. It's just like the trying to save my job trade, and it totally blows up in their face. A new regime comes in, 7 months later into the organization. It just never even came close to hitting, and they have to buy out OEL. You're going to feel the effects of that buyout even more the next 2 years. Dylan Gunther's turning out to be an unbelievable goal scorer. It still hurts. Yeah. And you know what? Part of it, too, is like this organization, this front office has been able to manage it and still build a cup contender in spite of that trade happening six months right before they took over. Well, like, that to me is remarkable.
We're sitting here and talking about and lauding this team's depth.
Yeah.
And it's about how much is – I think it's about $4 million this year that they can't use because of buyouts / retained salaries. Because now the Mikheyev thing, that was their own signing, right? You don't want to blame – but Pullman obviously wasn't theirs.
Yeah.
They had to buy out OEL. So you're talking about at least almost $4 million this team can't use.
Yeah.
Because of that. And they still have the team they have right now. That is a testament to what they've done.
We're going to have Kevin Woodley join us here in just a few moments. He's just walked in to the beautiful Park Casino here at the Center Bar, which is where the Mobile Kintec Studio is set up today. Our friends at Park Casino are the official casino resort for the Vancouver Canucks. And if you're looking for a home base to elevate your hockey experience pre- and post-game this season, it's Park Casino.
casino, whether it's at the Center Bar, whether it's at one of the many places you can grab a bite to eat inside Park Casino. I mean, this is the place to be. And the Canucks are going to be good. You want to feel the vibe around Rogers Arena as you're getting into the game. What better place than to stop by Park Casino for a pregame before the big game?
Well, yeah, and you not only, you know, do you have a chance to come and win a Canucks jersey and Canucks tickets as well, when you come and sign up with the Encore Rewards, you can also get a $20 free play for the casino, so you can make sure to do that as well if you want. But one of the things I love about this place is post-game as well. There aren't, you know, in terms of having a spot post-game that's open late, and you can just pop in, you know, take a load off, hang out a little bit before you head home.
How many NHL cities would love to have this?
Yeah.
You have it right in your backyard here in Vancouver, and of course, we're here tonight. As Sat mentioned, we're giving away a Canucks jersey. So if you stop by, you'll have a chance to win that. Of course, must be 19+. Please play responsibly. It is Canucks Central, live on location at Park Casino, ahead of the home opener at Rogers Arena on Sportsnet 650.